the safety of the customer service committee meeting. And before we start the agenda items, I would ask Mr. Krakowski to give us a safety message for the
committee. Sure. Good morning and happy new year, everyone. Just as a reminder, in case we need to exit this building, we ask that you exit through the doors in front of me, what I'll say is the main doors, or the doors to the left and right of me. Please gather outside on the lawn in the building museum away from this building. Also, just for your information, there is an AED by the guard station and restrooms are past the guard desk. Today's safety contact with the potential wintery mix we're going to start seeing this Friday night into Saturday. It's a good reminder to review some tips when walking on icy surfaces to reduce the potential of falling. Wear boots or overshoes with rubber or neoprene soles, or if you have them, ice cleats, leather or plastic soles on the shoes will increase the risk of slipping. Use special care when entering or exiting your vehicle. Use your vehicle door and seat back to brace yourself. This will give you added stability when exiting your vehicle. It's always a good idea to potentially test the area you're walking for by lightly tapping it to see if it's slick. Bad habit I have, don't walk with your hands in your pockets. This will reduce the ability for you to brace yourself if you begin to slip and fall. Take short, shuffling steps. We call it walk like a penguin. This will help you prevent falling. And again, if you feel you are starting to slip or fall, we suggest you roll with the fall and try to relax and roll into this. This will potentially decrease your injuries. That's our safety contact.
The agenda is before us. Are there any questions about the agenda? None. I consider it. I accept it. The minutes are before you. Motion for approval of the minutes. And thank you, Slough. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Arnstein. All those in favor?
Aye.
And objections? None. Thank you. I approve. This morning we're going to have an administrative item, and I'd like to give a brief introduction to that. The Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Joe Leader, will provide an overview of the committee's Metro Rail car improvements that are going to be made. The General Manager's Back to Good is the emphasis of this, and we can turn it over to Mr. Leader for that presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, good morning and Happy New Year. Many members of this committee have requested an update on the 7000 series car procurement program. Although this is important and you will get an update in this presentation, I believe it would be of value if I would report on the performance of the entire fleet and what plans we have developed and implemented to make the fleet more reliable. We know our customers deserve to be on time. When we look at why our customers are late, 60% of all delay minutes are caused by rail cars. The impact to our customers is significant, as trains may be offloaded, causing extended waits for our customers, not only for those customers that were on the offloaded train, but for those customers that are down the line waiting. While rail car delays are usually not as severe as track delays, the sheer number of rail car delays is dragging down our customer on-time performance. To give you a sense of scale, in the calendar year of 2016, we were averaging about 8 missed dispatches a day and approximately 4 offloads a day due to rail car failures. Today, I'm going to be talking to you about what we are doing to reduce these rail car delays and improve service to our customers. But first, I would like to provide you with perspective on what happens to our rail cars on a regular basis. If you look at this depiction on a screen and as a clock, and let's start at the 12 o'clock hour, when regular service ends, trains return to our 9 yards. At this time, the cleaning of our rail cars commence, as well as the daily pre-trip inspections are performed on for each rail car that is ready for service each day. Each daily pre-trip inspection takes approximately 20 minutes per rail car. Next, we build trains, which includes approximately 140 trains for revenue service and 5 gap trains. Once the trains are ready, revenue service begins. So as an example, train 408 leaves Alexandria Yard at approximately 4 a.m. and makes some stops for employees along the way to Largo, and then eventually enters into Revenue Service at approximately 5:07 in the morning. After the morning rush hour is concluded, some 66 trains are taking off the line and are laid up. And then by midday, some of these trains are reconfigured from 6-car trains to 8-car trains to match the evening service requirements that are needed. Following the evening rush, trains begin completing their runs, and by 9:30 p.m., approximately 72 trains have returned to the yard. In regards to our fleet's performance over time, I would refer to it as poor and inconsistent. Our fleet's performance I do not accept, and I have charged staff with developing plans to improve it. What you see here is our customer-facing key performance indicator that tells how far a rail car travels before causing a customer a delay, 4 minutes or more. For November in 2016, the latest data that was available at the time the presentation was put together, we performed around 65,000 miles, our MDBD. To put this in context, the rail car travels approximately 5,000 miles per month. This means a rail car travels over a year or approximately 13 months before a failure leads to a service disruption. Over the course of this year, we've seen notable improvement. However, we need to become more consistent in providing a level of service that our customers deserve. In response, staff has developed a reliability plan containing three main components, and they are changing the composition of our fleet by replacing the oldest and the least reliable cars with the new 7000 series cars. Implement new maintenance campaigns to address those failures that most commonly result in delays to our customers. And finally, in a more long-range strategy, we need to change the philosophy of our maintenance program so that we become more proactive versus reactive. And just last night, I received the December figures for MDBD, and our December 2000, we ended with over 76,000 miles. So as you can see with that graph, we are trending in a positive direction. For now, let's start with the current status of our 7000 series car program. The first 7000 series car went into service in April of 2015. As of December 2016, 256 cars have been commissioned, and that equates to approximately 32 trains. The initial delivery pace was well below Metro's expectation. Approximately 8 rail cars per month was what Kawasaki was delivering. But with increased focus, Metro has pressed Kawasaki to improve the delivery schedule, and this has paid off dividends. For the past 3 months, Kawasaki has delivered 20 cars per month. To sustain this pace, Metro's executive staff as well as the 7000 series staff meet regularly to tackle issues to ensure that we can sustain commissioning 20 cars per month. In addition to delivering and commissioning schedules, Metro also tracks Kawasaki's performance in providing reliable cars. Kawasaki has improved reliability as measured by mean distance between delays, or how long a rail car travels before having an incident that causes delays to our customers. In 2016, there have been 5 months when the 7000 series car has met or exceeded 100,000 miles between delays. This is significantly better than the calendar year of 2015, where they were only averaging about 36,000 miles. Results for the second measure, which is mean distance between failure, indicates that Kawasaki still needs to make improvement. A failure occurs anytime a system on a rail car malfunctions that may or may not take the car out of service. MDBF is important as it reflects the totality of malfunctions occurring on a rail car. MDBF is currently well below contract expectations of 20,800 miles between failures. However, they are improving. In December of 2016, the MDBF was just short of 11,000 miles, so they are starting to go in a positive direction. Metro also tracks Kawasaki's performance on a third measure, which is called the percentage of cars available. And Kawasaki is meeting the contract target most of the time. I think right now they've only missed it by in 1 month. To ensure continued focus on improvement, Metro's Quico Group and also Carr Equipment's engineering staff monitor performance not only here at our Greenbelt facility, but also at the Lincoln facility. And again, Paul and I meet with Kawasaki to ensure that we're letting them know from the senior executive level that we want to apply as much pressure to Kawasaki as we can. Replacing unreliable rail cars with a more reliable fleet is part of our strategy as well. The 7000 series will replace the 1000 and the 4000 series cars, resulting in huge improvements in reliability. In the graph, you see calendar year 2016, the mean distance between failure for the 4000, the 1000, and the 7000 series. The 7Ks right now are 25% more reliable than the 1Ks and four times more reliable than the 4Ks. You also see the target where Kawasaki has committed to get the 7000 series too, meaning that we expect considerably better performance with the 7000 series. In regards to the rest of the legacy fleet that will be around for some time, we are working to improve the reliability as well, and this will be critical if we are going to improve customer on-time performance. To do so, WMATA is beginning to a very specific and directed campaign on the legacy fleet, scheduled to be completed by the middle of 2017. We are completing this campaign during our SafeTrack projects to take advantage of the lower demand for car availability. The fleets include the 2000, the 3000 series, the 5000, as well as the 6000 series. The specific campaigns are designed to cover critical subsystems that include HVAC, doors, brakes, and propulsion. These subsystems require attention to reduce the number of incidents in revenue service and to improve customer experience as well as car availability. So just in 9 months, all 740 cars will have its annual inspection completed as well as all necessary repairs made for the specific subsystems that we are targeting. Year to date, these subsystems have caused 380 incidents from January to September of 2016. And by the end of this December, we have completed about 26% of the campaign that we have started. In November, we presented our strategy to improve track reliability through better preventive maintenance. We need to do the same for our rail cars. Presently, 70% of our rail car maintenance is corrective and only 30% is preventive. We need to change this so that we are out of the reactive mode and become more proactive. And here are the following steps we are taking. We want to change the composition of the fleet so that we can run the same series fleet. When we brought on the 2000 and 3000 series cars years ago, as well as the 5s and the 6s, they were meant to run as their own train. So once we retire the 1000 and 4000, we would like to rebalance the yards and go back to that kind of method. You know, currently, as we belly the 4000 series and the reliability of the 4000 series is so poor, it brings down the reliability of the entire fleet. We recently also have established a reliability-centered maintenance planning office that uses a data-driven approach to evaluating and retooling our maintenance strategies. For example, in partnership with engineering, staff are reviewing our rail car fleet inspection intervals to ensure we perform the right level of inspection at the right time. We are also introducing condition monitoring so that we can make repairs that avoid service disruptions to our customers. For example, about a month ago, car maintenance began using an ultrasonic testing unit. It has been used to check for pneumatic leaks during the periodic inspection process. Using this tool, to date, we have found 8 leaks. We have identified 8 leaks and made the repairs that, to the normal mechanic, without this tool, we would never have found it. And eventually, it would have led to an offload. With that said, we are also trying to sustain improvements to our maintenance program, so we have been providing what we call maintenance boot camps for our least experienced mechanics, and we're developing a plan for additional training based on the results of recent computer-based training that we are undergoing. In addition to improving reliability, we are also working to improve availability by making the best use of our resources, and they are people, maintenance, space, equipment, as well as parts. And this includes an enhanced rail car shop planning, which we've now introduced to all our shops. So what happens is when a train comes off the line and has a defect, what we used to do is bring the train into the shop, begin to diagnose a problem. We might find out we don't have the part. Take the train out. We just wasted manpower as well as we wasted shop space. So what we do is we perform a triage in the yard track to make sure we've identified what the subsystem is, that we have the parts available. Then we begin to plan to make sure we have the right mechanics, on duty, as well as the shop space and the lift space that is needed. And what we found is we're turning the cars in and out of the shop more quickly and more efficiently. Regarding parts, we're putting rail car parts on long-term contracts, and this will help reduce the processing time that it takes. Also, we're looking at balancing the amount of cars in certain yards to ensure that we don't put too many defective cars in one yard where one shop is overloaded. So we're trying to balance the fleet out. And also, we're making sure that we have yard technicians available for troubleshooting issues during train departure times. In short, with the changes in the fleet composition and continued improvements in the 7K performance, along with our current campaign to improve reliability to our legacy fleet, we expect at least 25% fewer delays in 2017. Long term, when I came here and I took a look at the maintenance program, I was surprised that we did not have in place a systematic overhaul program. In New York City, we had what we called an SMS program, a scheduled maintenance system, that involved doing a systematic look at what parts had deteriorated or subsystems that caused routine failures, and schedule a wholesale overhaul to improve their condition and performance. In New York, this was performed approximately every 7 years, and not only improved the availability, but also increased the service life of the actual rail car. The R32 fleet in New York City is over 50 years old and is still running in the system today. Looking within Metro, we have a best practice in Metro Bus that does a midlife overhaul at 7.5 years to maintain a life expectancy of 15 years for a bus. And as a result, we have some of the best performing buses in the industry, and I think we're ranked number 4 when it comes to MDBD. When I look at the rail, for some reason we opted out to that. We opted out of this type of work, but and the result is what you see today. And this is something we need to look at, and we begin planning for right now. This concludes my remarks, and I will open it up to any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Lira, and thank you for the presentation. And I think it highlights one of the things that we're looking forward as we go forward, and saying we have to be reliable, we have to be safe. We're responding to our safety oversight folks in getting rid of the oldest cars, but we're also putting in place that maintenance scheduling and that maintenance process that gives us a much more efficiency in terms of doing that for our customers. And as I look at that, the 1,000 series cars that are going out, what's our timing in that when we basically
Say that again?
The 1,000 series cars.
It should be by the end of this year.
This year
we should have the 1,000 series retired.
And that's a good news piece to be able to celebrate, because we know the challenges that we've been having with those. I'd open the floor up, Mr. Lobby, and then this.
Thank you for that summary, Mr. Leader. I wanted to ask a couple of questions about the 7,000 cars, because I know that we're trying to change out the older cars and the less reliable cars. Where did the 7,000 cars measure up to the rest of the fleet? And I mean, the 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, are they better or are they worse as far as reliability is concerned?
In terms of reliability, it's the MDBD has been inconsistent, but it has shown some real good promise. I think it was in November or December of last year that we had an MDBD of approximately about 149,000. So we are starting to see a positive trend in both the MDBD as well as the MDBF for the 7,000 series, and I believe they will reach their target as per the contract.
I was asking for the rest of the fleet. Are any of the the 2,000, 3,000, or the 5,000 or 6,000 today?
Okay,
are they better cars than where the 7,000s are now, or what?
The 2,000 and actually the 3,000 series are very good cars when it comes to reliability, but there are some issues with the 2,000 and 3,000. I would say right now the 7,000 series is comparable or even exceeding the MDBD when it comes to versus the 2,000 series. When you look at the rest of the fleet, yes, the rest of the fleet is I think performing under the 7K series.
So one of the keys are getting the 1,000s and the 4,000s out of the fleet, and I believe in your answer you said the end of this year we'll have the 1,000s out. What about the 4,000s?
Well, we just received the okay to begin retiring, so we are working with the internally to just figure out how to do that and how quickly we can get them off the property. I don't have a date right now for that.
Could you, final question, could you just give us an indication of what you think the challenges are with the maintenance practices that we're using today? I know you're making a lot of changes, but what are the challenges that you have to overcome to get to this new SMS type of system or this new preventive maintenance system? Is it money? Is it parts? Is it personnel? Is it time like it is for track? What are the challenges that we need to overcome?
Okay, so if I would just start with just the reliability and not the SMS yet. I'll just start with the reliability. I think getting our parts on long-term contracts will help significantly. I think when I look at both the rail and as well as the bus side, I think the bus side has done more work when it came to retraining and tooling our mechanics. So we are working, in fact, bringing Larry Skelton over from bus into rail has really helped improve. He's starting to put in place the programs I think we need to ensure that we have the proper training. When we begin looking at the 7,000 series, again, that's just a different animal. The trains are more high-tech, so again, it's going to be retooling the mechanics to ensure that they're able to troubleshoot and make the repairs as necessary. So we're going to be going through a transition, trying to get our mechanics up to speed to make sure that we can maintain our legacy fleet, as well as begin training them and ensuring that they can maintain our 7,000 series fleet. When it comes to the SMS program, yes, we need to start planning and thinking about how we want to do that. That will cost money, but I think in the long run, if we can get that program up and running, which will be a few years down the road, it will pay off dividends in extending the life of the cars.
Well, certainly for Metro riders, I know offload is a bad, bad word, and anybody who's gone through it, it's not just an inconvenience, but it's often a safety issue also, because we end up with overcrowded platforms and other things that make me very nervous. I've been offloaded and have felt the need to leave the station just because too many people and too much chance of things going wrong. So I think that's important, and I think that's where the rubber meets the road for the Metro riders. One thing I'd like to ask Mr. Wiedefeld and yourself, Mr. Leader, is that we put together a type of report that can be brought back to the board to see what kind of progress we're making against these numbers in a consistent manner, not just for the 7,000s, but how we're doing, so that we know if we are actually making progress against some of the maintenance challenges that you've identified. I think that would be very useful for this committee to have that type of information and a way to be transparent with the public on whatever progress we're making. Because anybody who goes through offloads needs to know that things are getting better. I think that would be very valuable information for our riders. Thank you.
If I could, that is part of the Back to Good program, because we want to put it out to the public, just as important as the board.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Leader, the New York Transit's mean distance between failure of their subway fleet is around 113,000 miles. For the best performing new cars that they have, it's over 250,000 miles. are we using the same definition that New York uses for the mean distance failure?
That's correct.
And if so, why are our goals so much lower?
Okay. It's a great question. And one of the issues with the industry is if you, there is no one definition for MDBD or MDBF. So when it comes to New York, they actually have a, I would say a little bit of a looser, I won't say looser standard, but they go with a standard of a failure that would cause a delay to the customer of 5 minutes. That 5 minutes is measured at the end of the line. So if they can make up time as they go down the line, okay, it would not count against their MDBD. Our MDBD is measured on a four-minute interval, and so we're a little bit tighter there, which kind of probably brings down our goals. One of the things I've asked staff to do, especially with the reliability performance group, is I'm trying to look at where that is. Where are we over the four-minute mark? The majority of our delays are between the 4 and 6 minute mark. We're almost there. So we're looking at definitions. I've asked them to look at industry-wide, both European and both North America, to see if we could look at our standard and why did we come up with a 4 minute standard when other properties have a 5 and a 6 minute standard. So we're going to be looking at that, make some decisions based on that.
So we could make up the time, just like New York, on 4 minute standard at the end of the line?
We could, but there's other issues. There's other issues I could tell you that probably have hurt us along the line. So, for instance, if you look at the 5 second rule that came up as a top cap years ago, we have never adjusted our schedules for that. So if you have 20-something stations on the red line, you add that up, you've already lost about 2 minutes. So if you have a delay in service at one station, failure, you have 2 minutes to kind of correct it, and if you don't, it's going to hurt you. So when you look at it, MDBD is important, as well as MDBF. You want to prevent that failure from actually happening. But from the customer standpoint, yeah, our definition is much different compared to New York.
Just more clarification. The comparison is between what we're calling MBD, the D versus the F, not the F versus the F. Mm-hmm. Their F is our D.
Got it. Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Larby covered my question, but if I could just do a follow-up. If you could let us know when you've got the schedule for when the 4000 series are going to begin to be replaced and then going to be completely replaced. I remember that a former chair of this committee used to refer to the 4000 series as the dogs of our fleet, so getting rid of them is certainly a priority. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, Mr. Leder, you have a chart that talks about the 7,000 reliability has improved and that these mean distance between delay and mean distance between failure are contractual targets in the contract. Mm-hmm. Under the contract, as you seem to indicate that Kawasaki hasn't met the target level, what's the penalty for them not meeting that?
Okay, it's a good question. Each month
that you didn't negotiate the contract.
Yeah.
We're here when somebody did negotiate and decided.
Okay. I mean, each month we meet with them. I don't think there was ever anything in the contract that says if you don't meet it each month that you're going to be penalized. What we're trying to do is work through with them what the issues are. But I can honestly tell you, coming from New York and talking to other properties, you will find this with new fleets. The only fleet I ever saw that ever came out of the bat that was just running with really out of any problems was the R-160s. But when we had the R-142s, the 142As, the 143s, and even the 188s, all the key performance indicators would start off low. And as you get time and they're running and you start tweaking the systems, you'll start to see them improve. I do believe, I would have to get back to you on actually what the contract states.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it. I just wanted to be clear whether there are penalties for not making the targets. The second, on that same chart, you indicate that on the mean distance between delay, the target is between 25,000 and 200,000, I guess that miles.
Yeah.
When are there time dates?
Correct.
They have to hit those? I take it they are not at this point required to hit the 200,000 target.
No, correct. You're absolutely right. There are, throughout the contract, it's based on the number of cars, which base plan, because there was multiple options, so it's based on that. But about every 6 months, it increases, you know. Right now, they should be, I believe it's, right now, they should be between 50,000 and 100,000, and for the most part, they're hitting that.
And when do they have to hit the 200,000?
When one of the options reaches certain mileage in 2 years, okay, it's based on that set of cars would have to be at the 200,000.
So let's say the first 50 cars that came on the property
mm-hmm.
have to meet the 200,000 at
yes,
after two
correct.
And a half or 3 years, whatever that.
Correct.
Okay, and I take it we're not there yet, but we will be there in the next 12 to 18 months.
Sure.
Thank you. One more question, then I'll yield the floor. You mentioned in one of your last slides, I guess, long-term initiative, fund $354 million railcar procurement to replace the 2000 and 3000 series cars. As you get to that point, I hope you will present to the board that recommendation in terms of various options. I assume various options. One would be the existing kind of rail car, the 7000. I guess another kind would be a modified 7000 that you might call the 8000. I guess there's an option that you could actually do some kind of rehab or rebuild of the 2000 or 3000 rail car. So I hope you'll come back to us with a series of choices rather than just a recommendation to spend $354 million.
We will. I mean, we're exploring that now. You know, we're thinking ahead in that area and some of the scenarios you just laid out.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. A question about the commissioning process and how that relates to improving reliability, and if you could just talk a little bit about that and then explain why we're moving, if the commissioning process does enable these cars to be a little bit more reliable out of the gate, why we're intent on reducing the number of days that we commission for the sake of getting more cars on the road. I just want to see that nexus of how that works.
Okay, so in the commissioning process, once that first train comes on board and does extensive testing, each train car that comes on has to go through a series of commissioning tests. What we've done is looked at the overall. We were in the beginning somewhat all over the place. It was taking, you know, at one time I think we were over like 30 days to commission one train. What we started to see is there were certain things we were doing in the commissioning process that we could do at the plant. So why not take the time and take some of those activities and do it parallel when it was happening at the Lincoln? And we could. So between that and also lessons learned, as cars came in and we started to see quality issues, bringing it back to the Lincoln facility and say to them, listen, these are some of the quality issues we're finding. Let's start correcting it on the line. We've actually began reducing the number of commissioning days, and that helps us. So there are a series of tests. Once the train passes the test, then the car can go into service. So, yes, sometime after that, you may pick up a failure. I don't think we're trying to reduce it just because we want to get them out there. We're just trying to be more efficient with the manpower and ensure that we do get the cars out there as quickly as possible.
And if a better way to think about this is we're reducing the commissioning process here
yes,
on site.
Yes, absolutely.
In terms of the overall
the work
process
is getting done, yeah, correct.
Okay.
And if I could just add that while Joe's group is doing that, we have this separate quality group that is basically looking at this independently from his group
yes.
to basically make sure that the commissioning is done correctly, that they're picking up things as well. So we have a double check on this.
And one other quick question, if I can, Ms. Hudgens. So the failures that we are focused on, obviously, are the critical ones, the HVAC doors, brakes, and propulsion. But the other category is significant in terms of percentage. I'm just
right.
curious, what are some of those
they
items?
Could be anything from the ATS equipment that's on the it could
okay.
be a truck issue, it could be a motor issue, communications issue. What I've asked staff to do is, as we begin moving forward with this campaign, probably by the end of the third quarter to begin looking at what other components we have. And once we finish with this phase one, if you want to call it, of a Blitz campaign, we're going to be looking to see what we could do on some of the other subsystems.
All right. Look forward to hearing about that work. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
One point of reference. Years ago, we were asked to fund a test track. And then there was all this stuff about the railroad CSX or somebody not being behaving correctly. Do we have, is the test track operational?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Good to hear that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Leader. And I want to thank you because I think we are looking at a comprehensive plan this time. We've always looked at our cars, but we've never looked at that. How do we get them into a cycle? That maintenance is continuous. And so I think this is an opportunity, but I think as we come back with our vital signs and start to implement this process into that, I think it gives the board a lot more information of oversight that we can understand and be able to
ask you and
see how we can help. And I think to Mr. Goldman's point in terms of the investment part, we have always decided when a particular series was going to go and get maintenance. Now I think it's a much more, as I take it, planned process, that we don't wait until we see what's failed in it, but we really see when the maintenance really needs to be done in order for it to be reliable to put in service for the customers. So I think those are things that we're going to look for data to see how we are understanding.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if there are no other questions, we're adjourned. Thank you.